Welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show.
All right, everyone, it's me, Ray, and the cats are already making their presence known. That's right, we are recording for the first time in the new recording space / bedroom / prison. It's going to be just...
Are you done? No, I can wait. That's okay.
This is going to take a lot getting used to, everyone. Feel free to take a shot every time you hear them make noise, although you'll be hammered, like, within the first 5 minutes. Alright, so, with that out of the way, it is time for Grappling with Ray. And if you want to talk about doing things last minute, it is current at the time of this recording. We have less than 12 hours before this episode is scheduled to hit the air. We had so much wrestling happen over the weekend that I'm going to attempt to cover as much of it as I can with a specific focus on SummerSlam. I don't even have a title for this episode yet. That's how hectic everything's been. Happy birthday to me. Because I'm guessing you all forgot. And yeah, welcome to the new recording space. All right, we're going to cover some quick results on some of the big events that happened over the weekend. First up, Impact Emergence that happened on Friday. Fun little Impact Plus exclusive event. You got to pay that $7.99 a month in order to be getting this. Or you could pay extra to watch it on Fight TV if I'm remembering correctly. Like with most Impact Plus shows, there were no title changes, but some fun matches with Christian Cage retaining the Impact World title over Brian Myers. Another fun match of note was the mixed tag team action, which saw Knockouts champion Deonna Purrazzo and Matthew Raywalt, formerly known as Aiden English, defeat Melina and Trey Miguel. Other than that, this wasn't a pay-per-view event, but it was the second episode of AEW's new Friday show, Rampage, subtitled The First Dance. CM Punk has officially come back to wrestling in a feel-good moment for the ages. Speaking from the heart, Punk states firmly that he has no love for his former employer and is more than happy to work with the stars of today, by confirming that he will be wrestling Darby Allin at the All Out event September 5th. I kid you not, I loved his quote where he says that when he looked at the AEW roster, he thought to himself that about how he wished these people were around, these young guns were around when he was still in the business and he got back in the old company. And then he's like, well, you know what? They're here now. Where the hell am I? So he got off his ass and he is back in the business. It was such an emotional moment in his hometown of Chicago. Big shout out to the man who the internet is referring to as crying CM Punk fan. I apologize, sir. I know you have a name. I just am not aware of what that name is. I'm only aware of the moniker that the internet has given you. No disrespect. Everyone's feeling exactly how you're feeling. You are just not afraid to show it. In other news, former Impact Wrestling Knockouts Tag Team Champion Kiera Hogan continues working with AEW as a free agent, making her television debut with them in a quick losing effort to Jade Cargill. Both of these women have a very strong future in the company. Whether Kiera and AEW decide to sign a deal is still up in the air, though. Big shout out to Kiera Hogan, honestly. She was one of my favorite performers for Impact Wrestling. Now she's a free agent. She's been working with AEW, as I said, but she's also confirmed to be showing up at the NWA Empower all-women's event. She is a part of the Empower tournament. I am sorry, I am being interrupted. I'll be right back. All right, and we're back. Feel free to take a shot every time that happens as well. You guys are going to enjoy this show if you just turn all these little inconveniences into a drinking game. I don't drink, so I don't get that luxury. All right, Kiera Hogan is going to be a part of the NWA Empower event, the all-women show that is being executive produced by Mickie James. That's going to be coming up this weekend. I believe that is their Saturday show. Yes, that is their Saturday show, and the NWA is also celebrating their 73rd anniversary on Sunday. So, big event there. Looking forward to it. In Ever News, we had a, speaking of two-night events, Ring of Honor had a two-night Glory by Honor show, another stunning showing with big main events, seeing Bandido retain the world title against Flip Gordon and Vincent defeat Matt Taven inside of a steel cage, thus earning a future world title opportunity. Speaking of opportunities, Ring of Honor continues to make some for their stars, as Demonic Flamita would win a six-man match to place himself in the world title rankings. The best matches of each show, in my personal opinion, featured the best wrestler on their roster, Jonathan Gresham. He would retain the Pure Wrestling title against his teammate, Rhett Titus, and then alongside all of his teammates in the Foundation, defeat Violence Unlimited to prove their dominance in the ongoing faction war in Ring of Honor. Now we're going to take a quick look at NXT TakeOver 36. This Sunday's TakeOver was a grand night indeed, with results that are sure to change the landscape of the division. I mean, not that it hasn't already been changed by a lot of recent events, if you know what I mean. Returning from injury, Ridge Holland had a dominant display in the pre-show, ensuring that he is to be booked as an imposing force for the division, potentially in the North American title picture. Right now, that picture is very heavy between Isaiah Swerve Scott, the champion, and his faction Hit Row, having a little bit of a gang warfare storyline with Santos Escobar and his teammates in Legado del Fantasma. I've been enjoying that. I honestly wish that that match had a spot on the TakeOver card. I would have even taken that as a pre-show over Ridge Holland. Ridge Holland could have been on the next TV instead of the six-man tag match, but oh well, I'm not the booker. Cameron Grimes would win the $1 million title, still not an officially recognized title by the WWE, by the way, and his freedom from his indentured servitude to LA Knight. Raquel Gonzalez would retain her NXT Women's title over Dakota Kai. I personally was disappointed in this outcome. I'm a very heavy advocate for Dakota Kai advancing in the company, being a representative of the company. I absolutely love her. She's an immense talent, and she's a great personality both in and out of the ring, as shown by her time on with BRE Start on Twitch, and then with the BRE Start faction of Up Up Down Down on YouTube. If you guys aren't subscribed to Up Up Down Down on YouTube and you love like gameplay content and whatnot, definitely do it. Sure, it's a bunch of wrestlers, but that and if wrestling's not your thing, I don't know why you're listening to this at this point, but maybe you just like my voice. Thank you for that. It is absolutely great content. They also had a big event, which saw BRE Start member Mia Yim retain the Up Up Down Down Championship over Shelton Benjamin, and we saw a new left-right champion crowned after Tyler Breeze, now known as Matthew on the Floor, vacate the title due to, you know, the fact that he is not traveling with the company anymore. Sad face. But regardless, Raquel and Dakota are two women who have told such an amazing story, both before and during the match. And I can proudly say I did not look at my phone once during this whole match. And that is pretty impressive because I was checking my phone a lot throughout the weekend. Afterwards, Kaylee Ray would appear, seemingly making the jump across the pond with her sights set on Raquel's title. Ilya Dragunov would put an end to the historic 870-day reign of Velter's UK title run. Kyle O'Reilly has seemingly put an end to his feud with Adam Cole, quite possibly leading to Cole leaving NXT, and Samoa Joe, having been fired a little over a month ago, defeated Karrion Kross to become the first ever three-time NXT champion. Also quite possibly leading to Karrion Kross leaving NXT. Yes, in regards to those comments I made, if you've been watching Monday Night Raw, you know Karrion Kross has appeared on Monday Night Raw multiple times. Notable there is he doesn't have the big glamorous entrance that he normally has. His girlfriend, Scarlett Bordeaux, has not been accompanying him to the ring. And up until recently, he wasn't wearing the NXT title to the ring, if by my recollection. I believe that was a recent thing that they allowed him to do. There's a lot of talk that Vince McMahon doesn't see much success in NXT anymore after NXT failed to defeat AEW Dynamite in the Wednesday night ratings war, even though both sides were both sides were saying that there wasn't a war, they weren't focused on each other. But when the whole internet is talking about the ratings war, you have to think there's got to be something there. There's got to be like some sort of rivalry, whether it's friendly or competitive or just downright vicious. There has to be something there. And as for Adam Cole, there were talks that Adam Cole's contract had actually expired in July, and he signed a one-month extension so that he could finish his story with Kyle O'Reilly. Adam Cole was recently invited to SmackDown, was immediately brought into Vince's office, and I don't know this, I was not there, this is just some reports that have made the rounds online from various people, and none of these reports say what happened in the office. From what I understand, it was a meeting strictly between Vince and Adam Cole, and when the two men left the office, these reports said that these men were both smiling and seemed very happy with whatever agreement they had come to, if any. So it seems like speculation would lead you to believe that Adam Cole has signed a contract, an actual official contract negotiation took place, and that Cole might be leaving NXT to jump to the main roster to tell new stories. Who knows, maybe he'll beat Shinsuke Nakamura for the Intercontinental title. That'd be something impressive, in my opinion. And maybe, you know, actually do something great with an NXT call-up instead of just burying them immediately like they have a tendency to do. All right, guys, so we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and I'm going to plug Culture City as I do. And then we're going to be talking the Indie Report. Be right back. Hey everyone, today we're going to be talking about Culture City. Actually, I say today, we're going to be talking about it all month long because we want you to donate to Culture City. Culture City is the America's leading nonprofit on sensory accessibility and acceptance for those with invisible disabilities. 1 in 6 individuals have a sensory need or an invisible disability. These are individuals with PTSD, autism, dementia, and strokes, just to name a few. Sensory needs are a common medical condition in which the brain has trouble receiving and responding to information that comes in through the senses. Common sounds, lights, crowds, and even certain smells might not only be overwhelming, but also physically painful. Because of this, these individuals withdraw from communities not by choice, but by circumstance, as they worry about how the world will accept or include them. Culture City aims to change that and make the never possible. Now here's where you come in. If you run a business, you can join the over 550 locations across the map to earn a sensory inclusive certificate. You'll receive training, sensory bags, and app integration. Becoming certified can help make a safe place for the members of your community, such as those with autism, military vets, and those impacted by dementia, Parkinson's, or stroke. Execute staff training and make simple but impactful modifications to your location to ensure you are an accepting and inclusive member of your community. And anyone can make a donation. We will be hosting a fundraiser on our Facebook page, but you can also make a donation through the Culture City website. I say that we're hosting it on our Facebook, but Facebook actually might not allow me to do it on our public page. So I'm going to be hosting it on my personal page, so that doesn't really help you guys much. Just donate straight to the website, because I'm going to be doing that too. Remember, these sensory disabilities aren't always visible. You could be making a difference for your friend, for your family, and for your community as a whole. Visit Culture City's website if you'd like to set up monthly donations, and please help us raise money. My personal goal is to try and raise $1,000 for Culture City this month. So, and Culture City is also going to be hosting their ballroom event August 21st. So be sure to tune into that and help donate whatever you can. And mention this to all your local businesses and see if they are be willing to take part in becoming sensory inclusive certified. Thank you for your time, and back to the show.
All right, guys. So as you know, I've been, now that restrictions have been easing up, although there is some danger of restrictions coming back down a bit harder with the state of America, I should say. I am still enjoying the independence as much as I can, especially in my local area. Unfortunately, my state doesn't really have independent wrestling, but yet I get to go to literally all the states that surround me to enjoy it. First, I'm going to cover Limitless Wrestling, a company in Maine. Limitless had an amazing show titled Undeniable to close out July, with big moments like Eddie Edwards giving the nod to AC Romero after the end of their match, Becca getting her nose broken by Charles Manson and then held hostage by the Prestige until her friend Davian acquiesced to their demands, and Ava Everett ripping up Love Doug's petition for a spot in the Vacation Land Cup moments after losing to Ring of Honor's Danhausen. But the biggest pop of the whole night came when Limitless champion Daniel Garcia held an open challenge, defending his title against anyone. The crowd would be serenaded by the song Heaven is a Place on Earth, and would scream their adulation as Anthony Green, formerly known as WWE's August Gray, made his return to the Independents. While he wouldn't be successful in his bid for the title, he was announced as one of 8 participants in the Vacation Land Cup. The Vacation Land Cup is an annual tournament held by Limitless Wrestling where the 8 participants are pitted against one another in 4 singles matches, with all 4 winners meeting in a 4-way elimination match. Last year, this tournament crowned a new champion after Anthony vacated the title to go to the WWE, so it's only fitting he's earned for a chance to win it back. The other 7 participants announced are Ace Romero, Alec Price, JT Dunn, Rip Bison, the only woman in the tournament, Becca, Daniel Garcia's protege, Kevin Blackwood, and, having successfully garnered attention with his ring work and his petition, Love Doug. This event will also feature a Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match. MLW's Kevin Koo versus Brad Cashew, and Daniel Garcia will defend the Limitless title against JD Drake for the 2nd time. You can catch this event coming Saturday in Yarmouth, Maine. That is, if their rabid fan base hasn't already sold them out of tickets, which, let me tell you right now, that crowd, it is crazy. It's a perfect crowd for them. They're a loyal fan base. I don't see empty seats at their show, at their tapings very often. Hopefully this show will make it to the to IWTV. Undeniable literally just barely showed up on like almost a full month later, so I probably won't get to see the Vacation Land Cup till September. By then, their socials will probably spoil whoever won for me, but who knows? Undeniable didn't really get spoiled that much for me, so I'm looking forward to catching it. All right, now we're going to cover one of my independent promotions, Atlantic Pro Wrestling. That's right, I won't be sitting in Maine on Saturday. I'll be sitting in Newburyport, Mass, watching APW Super Summer Smash. A lot happened since the last time I went to a show, which was June, because unfortunately, due to the move and a lot of other scheduling conflicts, I had to miss the July show. But we got new champions coming out of the last show, and they're going to be making their first title defenses. George Joel will be defending his title in a rematch against the former APW heavyweight champion Ilya Markopoulos. While Ilya had originally successfully defended this title against Nico Silva, Mike Girard came out and told Ilya he had made a promise to another competitor, this being George Joel. This led to an immediate title match, and Jorah would win the title. Can Ilya be a 2-time champion, or will Jorah retain the heavyweight title? And, despite appearing very friendly at the end of the show, how will these turn of events affect Jorah and Nico's' friendship? I'm telling you right now, guys, like, I honestly thought that Jorah was going to turn on Nico, especially because while Jorah is, like, this big hero in APW from his time as Robo the Punjabi Lion, he's now Jorah Joel, he's now a part of the Hardy family office on AEW television, he's still being loved by all the people in Newberry, but I'm waiting for that heel turn. I am waiting for that heel turn. Elsewhere on the card, we will see Little Mean Kathleen defend her women's title against the woman she defeated last month, Vanity Vixen. But there's more to this than a match. It was revealed that Champagne Joe Moakley has been stalking Miss Vixen through footage that was revealed during their match last month. What could this mean? I'm not entirely sure, but I am excited to find out. I know that the ring announcers were speculating after the footage was revealed. They were speculating that they were like, "What do they want? Does Joe Moakley want to attack her? Like, is he in love with her? Does he want her to join the Dynamite Death Squad and defect from Nightbreed?" We're not entirely sure here, guys, but we have a new women's champion. And we're actually going to get a double dose of women's action this week, as we'll also see Widow Belmont take on Sarah Teller. I'm a big fan of both of these women, and I'm excited for the action. My initial gut feeling is that Widow Belmont's going to destroy Little Miss Teller. But Sarah has proven that she won't go down without a fight. And in this business, there is always room for an underdog. Elsewhere on the card, we have H2O Ryan Waters fighting Bull James, formerly WWE's Bull Dempsey. Remember that gimmick, guys? Bullfit? That was my favorite chant back then. Bullfit. Bullfit. We also have Tyler Nitro taking on Swilly O'Brien after both men made their APW debuts at the prior show. Tyler Nitro would defeat Brett Ryan Goslin. Swilly O'Brien would come up in a losing effort to George Joel. So momentum says Tyler Nitro might take this away. And I gotta tell you, Tyler Nitro is one hell of a talent. I did not see him at the last show, but I saw him a couple years ago for Impulse Pro Wrestling. So I'm excited to get to see Tyler Nitro in action live once again. We're also going to see one half of the APW Tag Team Champions, Dynamite Danny Miles, facing both members of Nightbreed by himself, as his partner Mortar was suspended for post-match aggression after their successful title defense last month. I do see quite a few people on the internet after APW announced this match. There was at least one or two people that were a little disappointed that there aren't more tag teams in this division. And I understand that there has been a lot of changes since their hiatus. I understand that a lot of people retired, a lot of people have left for greener pastures. I am curious, though, because there is such a strong tag team division, and APW has a tag team title. Limitless Wrestling and Impulse Pro Wrestling, they don't have tag titles yet. So I'm wondering if we're going to start seeing teams like The Unit or MSP or maybe Team C-Stars. I know we're seeing Team C-Stars in like these big-name companies now and then, but they're not signed yet. So they could make an appearance for APW if... I don't know if APW is a company that allows man-on-woman violence. I mean, we got Joe Moakley, but who attacked Vanity Vixen, and I mean, he didn't get a fine or a suspension, so I'm curious about that. Man, I'm talking myself into a corner here. You know, but I mean, my personal opinion, I do not mind the mixed wrestling, so you know what, APW, if you can get Team C-Stars, I'd say give him a shot. Maybe not a title shot, but at least give him a shot in the tag team division, whether it's against a male tag team, a female tag team, or mixed. Now, that's my personal opinion. I'm not here to tell you how to run your company. I'm just here to tell you what I'm into seeing. But Matt, speaking of which, the match that I'm most looking forward to this show, we got the New England champion, Owen Brody, defending his title against natural Channing Thomas. Channing's been on quite a bit of a winning streak, stating from the beginning that his goal was to win the New England title. Obro, after successfully winning the title from Stiff Mike, has defended it against both Landon Hale and Ryan Waters. Now, granted, most people will tell you that's because Joe Moakley interfered and Obro cheated in some form or another. There may or may not have been brass knucks. I don't know, guys. I was there ringside. I mean, I saw someone fiddling with something, but I can't confirm or deny that it was brass knucks that made its way into the ring. It could have been nothing. But Joe Moakley's mind is a little preoccupied with Vanity Vixen, as we mentioned earlier. So will he even be ringside for this match? And if so, what difference will he make? Is he actually going to be focused on helping his client retain the title, or is he going to be too busy kind of fantasizing about Vanity Vixen? I don't know, man. But this is all going down this Saturday at Newburyport, Mass. Check out the APW social media to get any tickets if there are any remaining at airtime. You can also order APW Super Summer Smash on Fight TV, where you might just see me in the front row with Sicily and my old man. Excited to see you all there, guys. This is going to be an epic show. That once again, as you guys might be able to tell, I'm starting to suffer a little bit of burnout from all the wrestling this weekend. I might just not watch wrestling until this show. That's only like 5 days of no wrestling, which is pretty impressive for me, honestly. But because I usually just watch it and listen to the podcasts on the daily. But with the burnout I'm experiencing, I'm on vacation. I've got a lot of work to do setting up the rest of this recording studio space. And I genuinely, for my mental health, might actually take this vacation to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't watch as much wrestling. But then again, this is Grappling of Ray, so what world am I in? You know what? I'm going to take a quick minute, think on that, and when I come back, I'm going to let you guys know how my burnout may or may not have affected my views on the biggest blockbuster of the summer, SummerSlam. All right, guys, let's cover SummerSlam. We're going to go a bit more in-depth. We're going to talk a little bit about every match that happened, and it's a long list. We got 11 matches to cover. So here we go. On the pre-show, we have a surprise match that saw Big E defeat Baron Corbin and reclaim possession of his Money in the Bank briefcase, giving the crowd some hope that he might cash in later in the night. Baron Corbin, I got to say, he's been living this gimmick. I got to appreciate his commitment. He's literally allowed his hair to grow in despite the graying beard and his receding hairline, and he's wrestling in the same disheveled clothes every week, making his appearance worse as time goes on. As far as Big E, I'm going to tell you guys, going into the show, I genuinely wanted him to cash in on Goldberg. I want Goldberg to beat Lashley, only for Big E to cash in on him, because that's Big E's dream match. I listened to the New Day podcast. You guys should give it a listen, because it's so freaking hilarious, and these guys are so open and honest. You almost start to feel like you know them, and I genuinely want Big E to get this dream match. Like, I want him to get this. It's either give him his dream match or give him his last name, WWE. You gotta do one or the other. Big E Langston as the WWE champion, that sounds like a winning name to me. Next matchup, the team of RK-Bro defeated AJ Styles and Omos to win the Raw Tag Team titles. Okay, so I certainly enjoy the story of RK-Bro, and I understand that the pairing with AJ is only beneficial to Omos' growth as a performer. But you can count me among the many that are getting tired of these tag titles being held by two singles wrestlers instead of a dedicated tag team. That said, Randy seems to genuinely be having fun with Riddle, which is important for the morale of the division and for Riddle's future, as he hasn't really been known to be the best at making friends. Hopefully this will lead to a team like the Viking Raiders winning the gold, although it's possible RK-Bro could hold the belt until Crown Jewel this October. Alexa Bliss would defeat Eva Marie. This was a really short match. Like, we're not even clocking 5 minutes with this. And the story told that Eva and her protege Doudrop, let's face it, her real name's Piper Niven. Sorry, WWE, I'm not buying this bullshit name change. And that they're possibly breaking apart due to Eva Marie's abusive treatment. Although that could be retconned, because in a YouTube video they posted, Eva got with Piper and said, hey, we need to talk, and they walked away. So by the time this airs, I'm sure we'll have more information from Monday Night Raw. Now, the Alexa Bliss character is still incredibly popular, but I feel like she's directionless. Like, the way I foreshadowed this happening was, foreshadowed Alexa Bliss's character ending, was it always involved Bray Wyatt. It always involved The Fiend. I felt like that was the only way that the Lily and Alexa Bliss character could end, and unfortunately, Bray Wyatt and The Fiend, that character's just not there anymore, because unfortunately, WWE let him go in a very surprising move that caught a lot of people off guard. I have no idea what it is. Like, all the reports are saying WWE said budget cuts. We've heard absolutely nothing from Bray, which could mean that Bray's just willing to sit out his 90-day no-compete clause and just sign with someone else, but who knows. My prediction from our Backlash episode, available in the archives on www.73dreamstudios.wordpress.com, came true as Damian Priest would defeat Sheamus to become the new United States Champion. I'm not sure who may be next for Priest, other than an inevitable rematch against Sheamus. After all, Sheamus did post to Instagram, during this match, Priest actually tore the mask off of Sheamus, and Sheamus said that tearing the mask off was actually an illegal maneuver. So I'm sure Sheamus is going to try and politic his way into the rematch, saying that Priest had no right to take the mask off. The next match would also see the Usos defeat Rey and Dominic Mysterio to retain the SmackDown Tag Team titles. This story has me intrigued, because there are cracks that are starting to show in the father-son partnership. Dominic's been showing a propensity for cheating lately, much like his Uncle Eddie. We might be starting the long-form story that will lead to Rey versus Dominic at WrestleMania 38. That Rey Mysterio has gone on the record and said that he wants to retire either teaming with his son or wrestling his son. And I feel like this is Rey Mysterio's retirement tour. I mean, supposedly Rey's even on the cover of WWE 2K22. When is WWE 2K22 set to release? Not in the fall like it normally is, but in March, which would be right around the time of WrestleMania 38. Which would make it pretty good timing for a guy who's about to retire to be marketed on the cover of the game? Investigation? Deduction? The same mystery motel. It's Grappling of Rey, but I still got the deductive skills. I'm calling it right now, guys. Dominic is going to unmask his father after a little bit of cheating. Because after all, is Rey really the father? Or is Eddie his papi? I had to call back to that, guys. That was a tremendous ladder match. If y'all got Peacock, look up SummerSlam 2005 just for that ladder match. One of my favorite ladder matches of all time. All right. Now we're going to cover the biggest missed opportunity of the night. The SmackDown Women's title match. First, we got an amazing video package hyping up the feud between Sasha and Bianca. Then we got to see Bianca's great entrance down the aisle of Allegiant Stadium with her title and the crowd popping big. And then we got an announcement that Sasha Banks is not able to compete tonight. If Bianca knew this beforehand, she is a wonderful actress because the look of shock on her face and the confusion could not be masked. The audience started to boo, and those boos only got louder when Carmella was introduced as the replacement. I mean, really, out of all the people they could have pulled, they pulled the woman that she just beat literally the night before because SummerSlam was on a Saturday this year. Like, what, we couldn't have done any better? I literally saw local area wrestler, not local to me, but local to New England. I got to see wrestler Dylan Nix. You can follow him on Twitter. He literally tweeted, what, they couldn't have gone Becky Lynch? And seconds after I saw that tweet, we hear the theme music. Whoa, whoa, Becky Lynch comes out. The man is here. She literally takes a moment, soaks it all in, lets the crowd just cheer and idolize her. She immediately beats Carmella down and requests a title shot from Bianca. Now, for those that haven't seen SummerSlam, you may be wondering how this was a missed opportunity. They had the opportunity to have a tremendous match between two of the most popular women in the company. That's right, I said it. Bianca is, I won't say she's on par, but she's damn near close to the level of popularity that Becky Lynch is, and she's the closest out of everyone. And they at least have a chance to have a competitive match for a solid 10 minutes at least. And I say 10 minutes because, you know, they took quite a bit of time just getting the match. It's getting to the match itself. But instead, the bell rang, they shook hands, and Becky took a cheap shot and then hit her finish for the victory. And new. Now, I'm in the majority of fans and stars alike that took to Twitter to voice their displeasure. However, I would like to highlight one wrestling veteran that took the time to explain the psychology at work. The Blue Meanie used Twitter to explain that there was indeed a story to be told here, that Bianca wasn't prepared for Becky and hadn't even faced her one-on-one recently, that Becky did in fact pull a heel move by landing that cheap shot off the handshake, and he also noted that while Becky celebrated, the camera was giving Bianca plenty of screen time. I feel like there may have been a better way for this to go, but for all I know, Vince is in his office looking at us marks freaking out on Twitter. Well, that said, I wanted to be happy Becky's back. Why does it have to be so bittersweet, though? As the night wore on, and I started to experience the burnout that I referred to earlier, and I'm sure a lot of the fans in the hot Las Vegas summer were feeling burnt out as well, Drew McIntyre would defeat Jinder Mahal, a never match that wouldn't even clock in at 5 minutes. Charlotte would make Nikki A.S.H. tap out to win her 13th women's title. It's hard to keep count. WWE adds and subtracts her reigns for her heart's content lately. And then we got to see a little bit of nostalgia as Edge. He made his entrance through the floor as he did when he was a member of the Brood. We'd continue to see more fire from the Rated R Superstar as he would defeat Seth Rollins. I'm not exactly sure where we go from here with Edge Rollins. Perhaps they continue the feud into a stipulation match at Extreme Rules coming up in September and blow it off at Crown Jewel in October. Or we see someone else work with Edge, like a program with Big E over the briefcase that helped launch Edge's career once upon a time. Speaking of world titles, we have our dual main event. First, Bobby Lashley would defend the WWE title against Goldberg. This match it's a little beyond the average match time for that is, you know, with Goldberg matches. I can't talk right now, sorry. It was unique in that Goldberg would lose by technical submission after the referee called for the bell as Lashley kept the Hurt Lock on Bill. Goldberg's son Gage would run down to save his father, but would then be placed in the Hurt Lock himself. I thought this whole thing was a never missed opportunity, as many were pulling for Big E to cash in. Like, again, guys, you need to see that dream match. We then saw Roman Reigns defend the Universal title against John Cena. I honestly was just not at all interested in this match. I understood why it was the main event. There's a lot of positive reactions for Cena, especially during this Summer of Cena tour. Perhaps my burnout just finally got the better of me, but I struggled to pay attention, and by the time it was done, over 20 minutes later, like, really? We couldn't have cut 5 minutes off and give it to Becky and Bianca? Like, We saw Roman Reigns successfully defend his title only for Brock Lesnar to appear. And at that point, I turned off my TV and went to bed. Because right when I asked myself if I could care less, another fucking waste of airtime hit the screen. I am sure there will be issues with Paul Heyman's loyalty, and that is enough to intrigue me in this feud, along with Roman's head-of-the-table gimmick. Because as far as I'm concerned, Paul Heyman is the best aspect of Brock Lesnar's performance post-UFC. That's right, that is a hard opinion, that is a hard take, and honestly though, like, my inner mark is showing. It's not even an inner mark at this point, it's just fuck you, dude. I cannot stand Brock Lesnar. The amount of times I've seen him just legitimately hurt people and not give a fuck. Like, don't get me wrong, I loved him when he was in UFC. Because in UFC, you're actually aiming to hurt someone. In this business, you're supposed to actually protect your opponent. And I, like, he just, like, I'll never get over when he broke Hardcore Holly's neck. I won't get over when he bloodied up Randy Orton on purpose. Not even, like, just, like, a small cut. Like, he genuinely, like, made it so Orton lost so much fucking blood. But this guy just screams scumbag to me, and I'm personally happy that he prefers to stay out of the public eye up in, like, the woods of Canada or whatever with his wife, Sable. It's like, as far as, but honestly, dude, just, I'm genuinely upset. I'm glad, like, this is the point where I thought to myself, maybe I should just take a break, because if Brock Lesnar is going to be on my fucking TV screen, I'm not going to watch it anyway. That is my genuine opinion. I might watch it for Roman. I might watch it for Paul Heyman. But Brock Lesnar, I swear to God, if you don't have Paul Heyman talking for you, I will go the fuck to sleep. I will get more sleep so I can actually be in a better mood when I record these podcasts or when I do my Twitch channel, RDog20, or when I'm tweeting out at Clark Dion on Twitter or at Clark Dion 73. That's CLARKDYON, the number 7 and the number 3. Cheap plugs out of the way. Fuck you. And Lesnar, and yeah, that was SummerSlam with such a shitty ending, in my opinion. I agree with a lot of people. This was a very disappointing SummerSlam. The go home portion makes a big difference, and I know a lot of people don't feel like, oh well, the overall performance of a show really matters. What if every good guy won except for in the main event, and then the bad guy won? Guess what? Everyone's going home thinking about how the bad guy won in the end. Like, I understand, I appreciate a good story. The good guy's not always going to win in the end. But there's a reason why at TV shows like Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown, there's a dark main event. Because then the bad guy can win at the end of the TV show, but the crowd still goes home happy because they saw a good guy win the dark main event. It literally happened when SmackDown came to Manchester, like, years ago when I actually went. We had a bad ending for the TV taping, but then I got to see John Cena win a 3-on-1 handicap match, and the crowd popped. Like, it's business, guys. I understand it's business. I understand there's storytelling. You got business. You're not going to make everyone happy, but I'm just marking out over how much I hate Brock Lesnar. I can't stand it. So, once again, we're going to take another break, and the reason I'm taking a lot more breaks is because I'm hoping to attract more sponsors, like, maybe more of an anchor. Otherwise, until then, I'm relying on you lovely people to help me make all of this bearable with anchor.fm/support down in the episode description. You can donate $1, you can donate $5, you can donate $10, you can donate nothing, you can donate your time and just listen to this episode because I appreciate that. I just gotta take the time through these hard times and say I appreciate every single one of you. So we're gonna take a little quick break and then I'm definitely going to be giving you a slight tease for the end. Alright guys, thank you very much for putting up with me today. I know it's a shorter episode than you're used to hearing. Unfortunately, in this location, there is going to be a lot of interruptions, so I'm going to do my best to get all the information out here as quickly as possible. Maybe you guys like the shorter episodes. Maybe it helps you get on with your day a bit faster. So, with that said, next week we are going to have Horror Hotel, Army of the Dead. We are going to have Sicily back, and we're going to be finally revealing that big tease, that big announcement that we've been teasing all along. Oh, gosh.
No, I'm not going to reveal. I'm not going to tease much about it. I'm just going to say that it is Cicely's announcement. Cicely is going to be the one making the announcement. It is going to be concerning her. So that is all I can tease. Other than that, Army of the Dead, an absolutely fantastic movie, is available on Netflix. So if you have a Netflix subscription, feel free to search Army of the Dead. It's like it's over 2 hours long, but it's worth it. It's a wonderful movie. As you'll know, when you watch it or when you listen to our podcast next week. And as far as September goes, feel free to keep an eye on the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show Facebook page, where I will be posting the schedule for the month of September sometime soon. Much love to you guys, and thank you for putting up with the chaos that is today. I cannot say it enough. I appreciate you all very much, and happy birthday to me from you. Remember to donate to my birthday fundraiser at Culture for Culture City. It is a very nice organization, and I appreciate the efforts they make to be inclusive to those that need it. And yeah, I'm rambling now, but much love to you all. And if you're going to be in Newburyport for APW Super Summer Smash, I will see you there.